Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films: Armageddon Time, The Banshees of Inisherin, and All Quiet on the Western Front. Presented without comment. Hi, David. How are you?
Doing okay, Jill. How are you doing this week?
I'm okay. Is it Inisherin?
Inisherin, I believe.
Okay.
That's the way I remember it from the movie. It's not a very well-known place.
Well, the radio station is Inisherin, so.
Well.
Inisherin, Connecticut.
We'll get to that one in a moment. Let us begin with Armageddon Time. I guess everybody knows about Armageddon, although this is not the kind of apocalyptic movie that title may make it sound like. This is a movie written and directed by James Gray, and it is a very personal film for him because it is, I guess, semi-autobiographical. And it is about a young man who is growing up with his Jewish family in Queens, New York. And that we're back around 1980 in this movie. And it is a very quiet movie in which very little incidents happen. And that's kind of the challenge of watching it. Don't expect any action. Don't expect any Armageddons. But do expect a lot of kind of intimate portraiture of family life as seen through the eyes of the young boy of the family. So he is a very, very nice young man. He has some problems with his family. They're a little bit unusual in some respects, but mostly we just have fairly undramatic incidents that happen, which are made dramatic by the fact that they are at the very center of this movie. So his father is a boiler repair person by trade, but he is clearly a very smart guy and wants his family to have a good life. His mother is the president of the PTA at the school, and she has some ambitions to, I think, being sort of a minor player in the affairs of their neighborhood and so forth. And then a very, very important character is the grandfather, the young main character's grandfather, who sometimes tells him tales of the family's background coming from overseas and having gone through the horrors of the Holocaust. Obviously, members of the family survived, and obviously they're doing okay now living in Queens, New York, now that we're in the early 1980s. But that's another thing that figures into the experience of our main character. By the way, his name is Paul. Now, this is a very, very nicely acted movie. Paul is very, very well done by Banks Repetta. The fascinating actor Jeremy Strong, who is so really just absolutely marvelous in the TV series Succession, does a nice job. Not a very interesting job, but a nice job as the father of the family. Anne Hathaway does a fine job playing the mother of the family. Anthony Hopkins, who never can do wrong, well, almost never, is very, very fine as the old grandfather. It's a slightly stereotyped character, the sweet, cuddly old grandpa who tells the truth to the young boy and everybody loves him. He's fine. Anthony Hopkins does a nice job with that. Prevents it from being too much of a stereotype. And there's one other character I'll mention who's very important, and that is a young classmate of Paul's at school whose name is Johnny and who is played by Jalen Webb, and he is a black boy. So we have Paul, who is a Jewish boy, and Johnny, who is a black boy, and they become very close friends, and they get into trouble together. In fact, they first bond over getting into trouble together. So one of the big things that happens in the school is that Paul is just not doing as well as he should in school. The family is worried about him. He has an older brother who's a very minor character in the film, but the older brother is obviously a real achiever, and Paul is not a real achiever. He's kind of a goof off. He doesn't really know what he wants to do in life, and he's not applying himself, as they say. So the parents send him off to a new school, which is a fancy, posh kind of a school, and there he gets into new kinds of trouble and has new kinds of challenges coming along the way. So, as I said before, Armageddon time, despite its rather apocalyptic title, which makes it sound like big dramatic things are maybe going to happen. It is not that. It is a very sort of a quiet, almost recessive kind of a movie, and you have to get onto its own wavelength. There are some amusing things, I think, that happen along the way. The 1980, when the movie begins, is, after all, the very beginning of the age of Reagan, and politics play a small but important part in this movie. And at one point, at his new school, who shows up? Some of the Trump family are sitting there. Donald Trump's father is sitting there, and there's a little talk which is being given by a member of the Trump sort of aristocracy of the time at the school, and that's a reminder of the great conservatism of the early 1980s and the kind of conservatism that still exists now, although a very different kind of conservatism. So that's an interesting little subtext in the movie. But mainly what we have are Paul's experiences, his trying to figure out ways of growing up, staying true to what he wants to do in life, while also adjusting to the wants and needs of the people around him, and not doing an awfully good job of that. And we also have that character of his very close black friend who wants to be an astronaut, and people just think that's an absurd ambition, and that's an even greater challenge than anything Paul has to face. It's a very, as I said before, a very personal film for James Gray. He's not a filmmaker who has ever really captivated my imagination. This movie doesn't really captivate my imagination. But if you want a nice, low-key, intimate look at Jewish American life, and also to some extent black American life, back just a few decades ago, when the world was becoming what it has become since, it's a nice movie to see. Not a great movie, but a nice little movie. Let us move now to The Banshees of Inisherin. And oh, we are now in such a different place. This is a very, very Irish movie. We're in Ireland for this film, although not exactly Ireland. It's actually a small island off the coast of Ireland. And there we meet some people who live there, and we spend some time in their company. And the two main characters are Pádraic, who is played by Colin Farrell, and Colm, who is played by Brendan Gleeson. And another very important character is Pádraic's sister, Siobhan, who is played by Kerry Condon. And they are really the only really important characters in this movie. And the whole movie centers on a feud between these two main male characters, Colm, played by Brendan Gleeson, and Pádraic, played by Colin Farrell. And what happens is they are the closest of friends. They are really, really good buddies. Of course, they are of different generations. Colm, being played by Brendan Gleeson, is a lot older than Pádraic, played by Colin Farrell. And one day, Colm simply announces to Pádraic, "I don't like you anymore. Stay away from me. Don't talk to me." Well, Pádraic is very, very confused by this, very upset by this. They have been the closest of friends for a very, very, very long time. "Why?" "Well," says Colm, "I just don't like you anymore." "Well," says Pádraic, "that's not very nice. And by the way, this is a small island, and it is a small town, and there aren't all that many people around. And if your very closest friend suddenly says, 'I just don't like you anymore, and I don't want to be near you, and I don't want you to talk to me, and if you come into the pub, don't sit anywhere near me,' and that sort of thing," it's very upsetting. Poor Pádraic, he is upset, and he can't seem to abide by Colm's new wishes. He keeps seeking Colm out, going to visit him, sitting near him in the pub, talking to him. So finally, and this happens not that long into the movie, so it's not too much of a spoiler that I'm about to give, and I certainly won't tell you how it all turns out, but eventually Colm says, "I am so serious about this." And by the way, Colm is a fiddler. That's what he does. He writes music, and he plays his fiddle in the pub, and he is a local musical figure. Colm says to Pádraic, "If you talk to me again, I will cut off one of my fingers. And if you talk to me again after that, I will cut off another one of my fingers." "Well, you won't be able to play the fiddle anymore," says Pádraic. "That's right," says Colm. "And I'm just showing you how serious I am about all this." Well, this is a very serious threat. What is going to happen? I won't tell you what happens. But yeah, it turns out in this very low-key, very small little movie, it turns out to be pretty dramatic. Now, the feud, its origins, its causes, the whole reason for it is never really made clear. And when Colm does start to take what seems like pretty drastic action in order to really cut off relations with Pádraic, his former closest friend in the world, it's never really clear why he feels so strongly about this, or why he takes such drastic action, or why these things are happening. We're just supposed to accept that these things are happening. And I found that made the movie a little bit, just hard for me to quite believe. By the way, it was written and directed by Martin McDonagh, another filmmaker with whom I've never really felt a strong connection as a movie maker. He's made some pretty popular films, but again, never been quite a favorite of mine. His most popular films, he's made a number, just a small number of movies, directs a movie every few years. In Bruges, he made Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, he made, and The Banshees of Inisherin now. So I found this movie to be it never quite captivated me. I never understood the reasons for the feud, and I don't think that's my fault. I think the movie just doesn't make them clear. It expects us to accept that this feud will happen and accept that one of the people in the feud might take drastic actions and just go along with this. It's a beautifully acted movie. Colin Farrell does a very nice job of acting his younger character. Brendan Gleeson is a wonderful actor who's almost always fascinating to watch. And again, if you can get onto the wavelength of these two characters and just accept that these things are happening just because they're happening, then it's a very nice movie. It's beautifully photographed, by the way. All kinds of very nice little landscapes on this little island off the coast of Ireland. But I just can't say the movie ever quite convinced me. I rather had a nice time settling into its atmosphere, but the story itself never really made all that much sense to me. So atmosphere, acting, it's got those. A convincing narrative, I'm afraid it doesn't quite have that. And now the movie of these three films today, Jill, that I really like the best, and I think it's probably one of the very best of the year so far, All Quiet on the Western Front. This is based on a wonderful pacifist novel of many years ago by Erich Maria Remarque. And it is a very fine novel, and it's a while now since I've read it, but I totally recommend the novel. It was made into a terrific movie, Hollywood movie, back in 1930, just as the silent movie era was ending. And in fact, All Quiet on the Western Front was made in 1930 in Hollywood as both a sound movie and a silent movie, and both versions are excellent. In fact, I think the silent movie is even a little more excellent than the sound version. But anyway, it's a movie with a real pedigree. It has been remade in the years since 1930. Now we have a really excellent remake, directed by Edward Berger and based very closely on the novel. And again, it's a pacifist novel, and this movie, even though in many ways it's a war movie, is very much a pacifist war movie in that it never flinches away from the absurdity, the idiocy, the horror of war. I think this is a timeless topic, and I think that in our own time, it's really always good to look at this movie and be reminded of the sort of messages that it gives us. So our main character is a young man named Paul Boehme. He's played by Felix Kammerer. And at the very beginning of the movie, he goes off to fight in World War I. Yes, it's a World War I story. The novel was written many years ago, and this is very true to the novel. And at the beginning, we see him and all the other young men like him getting a talk about how you're going to go out and you're going to bring glory back to the motherland and you're going to make the world safe and you're going to make Germany great and you're going to accomplish these things. And then you'll come back and everyone will honor you and everyone will salute you. Well, of course, we all know that it isn't going to be that way. The trouble is that sort of thing still seems to work in our modern day wars. No more about that, but I think everybody knows what I mean. So anyway, poor Paul, well, he is poor at some points. He goes off to fight in the war and he makes some very good friends there, and different things happen to him and happen to his friends, and that is what the movie is about. And it is about exactly the sorts of things that one might expect to happen in World War I. From a movie which is made from a pretty much a pacifist point of view, an anti-war point of view at the very least. And you have to have some sticking power to stay with this movie, because some of the things that happen in it are pretty horrifying, because it is, after all, a war movie, and it is not an old-fashioned war movie where you see a lot of heroism and you see a lot of people doing great heroic things and everything comes out okay in the end, or maybe there's a sort of a heart-clutching moment at the end. No, this is a movie which is much more realistic than that, much more real than that, much more true than that. By the way, the ending of the old Hollywood movie, which I also really want to recommend to people, 1930, directed by the great Lewis Milestone, has one of the truly legendary endings of all time, a magnificent ending, the perfect ending for this war movie that is made from an anti-war point of view. All Quiet on the Western Front, the remake, which, by the way, is a German film, does not try to recreate that ending, which I think, you know, it's probably just as well, because it probably couldn't couldn't do it as well, but it still ends very effectively. It's a movie that gets across the horrors of war, that gets across the pity of war, that gets across the total stupidity of war in all kinds of ways without ever hitting you on the head with it. You just watch the experiences of Paul, you watch the experiences of his friends, and you get the message loud and clear. It's a beautifully photographed movie, very, very effective. Sometimes very nice things happen, not very often, and they are very, very beautifully shot, and we get a real sense of what's going on. But mostly we get a very, very vivid sense, again, of the horrors and the terrors that a young man goes through whose life is being destroyed by a war that really does not make any sense and that does not end well for the boy or for his country. I cannot recommend this movie too highly. It's about 2.5 hours. It's a German film. I was absorbed by it every step of the way. All Quiet on the Western Front is one of the most important movies, I think, for anybody to see so far this year. And so that is my somewhat anti-war story this week, Joe.
For which we thank you, as ever and always, David Sterrett. Films in Focus. The films Armageddon Time, The Banshees of Inisherin, and All Quiet on the Western Front.